Welcome, everybody. Good evening. Now, this is the third of our series, seminar, on connection, kind of ways to help us connect with the world, connect with each other, and to connect with ourselves as well. So I'd like to start this time a little bit differently. I'm going to ask you to, again, just be kind of be comfortable, a little bit of a meditation posture or pose, just as long as you're kind of comfortable. Feel free to lounge as well. And let's start by bringing to mind a time when you were generous, when you gave with a kind of clear willingness, either a material object or some money or your time or your concern to somebody. See if you can recall that time. And bring your awareness to the feeling that arose. In that moment of generosity. And how does it feel to remember that moment now? And now, I'd like you to try and recall when you were the recipient of a generous act, when someone unexpectedly gave you his or her time, concern, or something, an object, maybe something you needed. And at that moment when they made that gesture, how did you feel? How did you respond? And how does it feel to remember that now? Okay, thank you. We'll come back to this again in a couple of in a few moments here. 2 weeks ago, I started this series that we're doing by suggesting one way we can cultivate or practice or enter deeper into connection is through gratitude. That is one way, one road to help deepen and broaden our sense of intimacy, our sense of connection in this world. And tonight, I'd like us to consider, as we've just been practicing generosity. I was thinking about this, that how close generosity and gratitude are linked together. One supports and nurtures the other. In gratitude, I think we see our dependence on others, how others can support us. Help us. And in giving, we clarify and strengthen our sense of connection with others. The Buddhist tradition, from the very time of the Buddha, The Buddhist tradition has expounded the virtues and the practice of generosity in all its many aspects. The Buddha said in one of the early suttas, or the early discourses, teachings of the Buddha, this is a quote, "If beings knew, as I know, the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would the stain of miserliness overcome their minds. Even if it were their last bite, their last mouthful, they would not eat without having shared, if there were someone to receive that gift." Among the, the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, those kind of foundational teachings, there is another foundational or key teaching called the Paramitas, or the Perfections. And there are variations on what constitutes this kind of list of Paramitas or Perfections. But all the lists that I'm aware of start with generosity as a virtue that we perfect, or in Sanskrit, dana, D-A-N-A. In Asian countries, Asian Buddhist countries, perhaps I should say, dana is one of the first teachings that children learn. In Thailand, Burma, Cambodia, Sri Lanka, monastics beg for food every morning. They go with these kind of large bowls, walking around the villages. And the laity, the people who are the non-monastics, and so parents and their children, other people, put food in the bowls. And parents will often encourage their children to, you know, offer the rice, offer the food in these little packets to the monks as they wander by. And then, in return, the monks and nuns also offer their dana, their generosity, to lay people in the form of teachings and helping and guidance. In Japan, on a much smaller scale, the Zen monks and nuns on occasion, not every day as they do in Southeast Asia, but on occasion they do a practice called takuhatsu, which is a kind of ritualized form of begging for food and money donations. And the monks of a temple or monastery, or the nuns, they'll wander through the neighborhoods, again at just certain times, chanting. And they often carry a kind of bag-like thing on their front, and then lay people will come forward, people in the neighborhood will come forward, and they'll offer donations of often money, like some small change, or sometimes package of uncooked rice. So that would be taken back to the monastery and prepared. Dana is very important, a very important practice throughout Buddhist Asia. And of course, not only to support the monks, but the building of temples, the upkeep, all of that comes from the generosity of the followers. Some scholars who study Buddhism have written that actually generosity is the primary practice in Asia, the main practice, in contrast to the kind of me focus that we have in the West on meditation, which kind of brings us, most of us, to practice, right? You know, I'm struggling, I need help, I need... And in that way, we kind of somehow have skipped or missed this practice of dana. And yet, looking at the Asian practice, doesn't this kind of emphasis on generosity in the Asian area, which I've just described, imply that the Buddhist path is first one of relationship, one of connection? The English word generosity is kind of interesting. The modern English word generosity comes from Latin, generosus, which originally means of noble birth. Who would have thought, eh? Of noble birth. And up until the 16th century, it meant the kind of aristocratic sense of being someone of noble lineage or of high birth. They were called generous. And to be generous was literally a way of saying kind of belonging to the nobility. And then, as you can imagine, it kind of came to mean a variety of traits or character traits in actions that historically, whether it's accurate or not, would be associated with the better qualities of the nobility. You know, gallantry, courageousness, strength, fairness, those kind of things. And gradually it came to mean the meaning it has today, to be generous, to be able to offer. And what I find particularly interesting about this is that this also, in some ways, echoes the similar situation at the time of the Buddha, in that the word that's translated as noble, as in the Four Noble Truths, that kind of word, Arya, is connected with our word Aryan, which means, you know, the Aryan race that Hitler thought about. The original meaning of that is also noble, or someone of nobility. But the Buddha used that word to indicate the qualities of someone who is awake with compassion and wisdom. That's noble. A person who is awake with compassion and wisdom. Generosity. I think generosity originates in acts of imagination. In order to recognize the importance of someone else's need, we need to see or imagine that need or hope arising in our own life. So in this way, generosity is a gifting, not only to the receiver, but also to the person who gives. It requires that we hone our receptivity, our awareness, for this generosity to be really effective. I think it brings us into a deeper connection with others. If we maintain a kind of distance from others, we will not see them clearly. And I think also they won't feel safe to approach us, to ask for help. And of course, when someone is afraid to ask, when we have this distance, it makes it very hard to give with any kind of true effectiveness. Generosity, I think true generosity, requires of us to be sensitive and to be aware of others, to their needs and hopes, and also what those needs and hopes kind of evoke in us. It fosters an intimacy of others and ourselves. I really think this awareness is really crucial if our generous actions are to be effective and skillful. Because isn't it possible to give the wrong thing, to give too much, to not give enough, to give what is not needed or wanted? In my own life, I had a very strong and powerful example of this. When a number of years ago, I took a group of students to Mexico, and we would, through the school, visit various grassroots organizations and extremely poor areas, Hidalgo in northern Mexico. And one of the projects that the students were required to do was to collect clothing. And they were allowed to bring one suitcase of their own clothing and then another suitcase packed full of clothing that we would donate this area particularly where we had a strong connection of farmers. Japanese students. Oh, and they're Japanese students. Thank you. I should have said that.
You hadn't really seen poverty.
At all, yeah. So I did this, I think, was it 3 times?
Yeah.
And the second time we arrived at Hidalgo, you know, and this was like, you know, 30, 40 students. So we had these like 40 suitcases stuffed full of clothing for them. And they said, thank you, but we're going to give this away. Because in Chiapas, which at that time there was kind of a lot of tension in Chiapas, we know people there need it more. And my students were flabbergasted. Because the people that we were visiting lived in probably 10-foot by 10-foot concrete cinder block houses with tin roofs. Some of them didn't even have that. They lived in huts kind of made of the local plant products. Very aware of the needs of others. The ground for generosity, the reason for generosity, or maybe I'll just stick with ground, the ground for generosity in the Buddhist tradition is shunyata, or emptiness. Or perhaps a better word is interdependence. One of the fundamental insights that arise out of our practice, our Zazen practice, or our meditation practice, is the growing awareness of connection with others and the world, a kind of intimacy or solidarity with all things. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist teacher, coined the word interbeing to express the kind of deep truth of our life. Deep truth, meaning we have to look for it too. Our everyday notion of reality is made up, that reality is made up of separate beings, you know, me, you, her, him, kind of standalone objects. The Buddhist tradition, the Buddhist practice, the teachings are that that is a delusion. You know, it's only true on the surface. And it is covering up a profound closeness, a profound intimacy that's there. So through practice, through contemplating this, experiencing to some extent, generosity naturally comes forward as our sense of self becomes larger, more inclusive. The Buddhist tradition holds that the more we realize our true nature, the nature of interbeing, the deeper our well of generosity. And it goes both ways, in that the Buddha and other teachers throughout the tradition have always held up the practice of generosity as a skillful way to approach selflessness, unselfishness. Another way, unselfishness. A kind of a way to transform our own understanding of ourself. of who we are. With every act of generosity, we acknowledge our interdependence, our profound connection with the world and those around us. And it's said in the teachings that generosity results in an open and spacious mind, a mind that resides in wealth and abundance, no matter what one's circumstances are. Isn't that wonderful? Wealth and abundance, no matter what one's circumstances are. It creates a place in our hearts where other good qualities can arise and thrive, like loving kindness, compassion, insight. I was thinking of another story to tell you. Just quickly, my own experience with this is, as a young man, some of you know, I went to Japan and I studied Aikido for a year. And living with my teacher there, who he refused to take any money from me. I was only 19, I didn't have much anyway. But even when I started to teach English part-time, well, I didn't really know how to teach either, but I'd get money from doing, you know, talking English with people. They enjoyed it. And my teacher would not take money. And he had very little income. You know, he basically lived on kind of donations his students would give him. But I remember so vividly, he would go to this box where people could put in donations. And he would pull out, like, whatever was there, and he'd say, "Let's go get coffee," or "Let's go for pizza." There's okonomiyaki, which I don't know how to. It was okonomiyaki, a kind of Japanese pizza that they. Anyway, it was delightful. That's such a wonderful teaching, you know. He had nothing, and just give more. In fact, I remember also he had a tea bowl that he would, you know, Japanese tea bowl, you know, those kind of round ones, and some of them are very expensive. You know, they can cost, well, they can cost hundreds or even thousands of dollars. Someone had given him a very nice tea bowl, and he didn't know how to make, well, I shouldn't say he didn't know, he never made Japanese tea in it. He made Nescafe instant coffee. And with a whisk, you know.
Of course.
And he would put in a powdered creamer, which in Japanese, this powdered creamer, the brand name was Creep. So he would blend that up and give it to all the visitors, right? And one day there was he had visitors. He was, you know, kind of a well-respected teacher in Kanazawa. One time, a person came to visit him who knew about tea, and you know, after they had their Nescafe, looked over and looked at the bowl and said, "Oh, wow, this is, you know, I don't know, some famous tea bowl maker, and you know, you should be treated very carefully." And my teacher said, "Oh, do you like that bowl?" And he said, "Take it." And in Japan, it's very difficult to give someone a gift. Like you have to offer it at least three times before they accept it. That's the traditional way. But that's what his life was. You know, and when we think of generosity, of course, material gifts come to mind right away. You know, to give money to people, to give things. But consider the non-material. The gifts of deep listening, of holding one's own views with a kind of lightness that will allow change, of taking true interest in the life and thoughts of others. These are also ways to deepen connection. these are some of the ways of giving the gift of truly being heard, of truly being heard, of being seen. And what could be more precious than that? To be really heard, to be really seen. And as I mentioned earlier, along with this gift, I think our sense of self can become altered, become a little more porous, less need of defense. Giving in this way, we set aside self-concern in order to identify with some concern that's beyond the boundaries of our ordinary lives. Kind of an expansion beyond ourselves. The borders that conventionally define us are eased or erased, and a really friendly intimacy can arise. One simple gift, one simple act of generosity, is that of recognition. An affirmation in speech or gesture or action that somebody else exists, that somebody else matters. You know, like when the guy comes, or the squeegee guy comes to do your windows as you're waiting for a couple of moments at the red light, to smile and just say, you know, oh, not today, thank you. Or something. To talk to somebody as you give them some change. To comment to the person who's running your groceries through the machine, you know, as the till, you know, she's running the stuff through, to talk with her a little bit. When we are not recognized or do not recognize others, the bond of kindness that binds us together as a community is really weakened. I know I feel really grateful when a person who sees me alone at a party or in a group of mostly strangers comes up and starts a conversation. Right? You ever feel that awkward moment? You're in like this party, you don't know anybody, and you're like, why did I come? On one hand, a simple act of generosity. But what a beautiful gift of affirmation. I see you. I see you. Another, I think, gift of generosity that we can practice is appreciation or acknowledgement of another's abilities or qualities. And sometimes this requires us to kind of work or overcome the reaction of envy or jealousy that may arise because of our own sense of or lack of self-worth. The Buddhist tradition has the practice of meditation called mudita, which is the cultivation or appreciation of the joy of the success or good qualities of others. And we can do this at any time. Even while we're aware of our own kind of envy or self-judgment, we can still offer the gift of appreciation with just as much sincerity as we have at that moment. To receive appreciation is usually strengthening and encouraging. And I think when we can do this with even a little bit of sincerity, it lessens or softens our critical sense of self. And we experience a little bit of joy, you know, to be able to say that. You did that so well. We can only give to the extent, though, that we're free, that we're not possessed by our things, money, or ourselves. But the most surprising thing about generosity is that the cupboard is never bare. There's always more to give. We practice generosity with compassion and wisdom. Of course, to give where it's appropriate and where it's necessary. But the lack of material goods or money or whatever is really no hindrance. There's always more to give. Dogen, the Japanese monk who brought this form of Zen Buddhism to Japan, wrote this about that point. He says, we give flowers blooming on the distant mountains to the Buddha and offer treasures accumulated in past lives to living beings. Whether our gifts are dharma or material objects, each gift is truly endowed with the virtue of the offering of generosity or dana. Even if this gift is not our personal possession, nothing hinders our practice of offering. No gift is too small, but our effort should be genuine. Now, this may seem a little odd, but it's a delightful practice. I recommend it, and it works like this. I give you this birdsong. I give this walk that I'm taking in the woods right now to my sick brother. I give you the sound of rain to calm your worried heart. Get it? We never run out of gifts. Just offer. Just offer, over and over again. Now, it seems a little weird at first. And you may not want to actually say to somebody, your friend, you know, I give you the snow-covered mountains. But on the other hand, why not? What a wonderful gift. I give you Seymour at night with the light sparkling. Yeah? This practice of generosity transforms our hearts, because through this practice we deconstruct the boundaries that we've created around ourselves and around others. We begin to taste anatta, or non-self. We begin to experience the connection that we all have to everything that exists. Acts of generosity express this. It's there. Generosity is just the expression of the intimacy and the connection that we have. And in the end, I should say, and I'll end now in a moment, we discover that we have really never given anything away. We've never really, like, said goodbye forever to whatever we've given away. Suzuki Roshi in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, puts it this way. Every existence in nature, every existence in the human world, every cultural work that we create is something which was given or is being given to us. But as everything is originally one, we are in actuality giving out of everything. Moment after moment, we are creating something. And this is the joy of our life. When you give something, you feel good, because at that time, you feel at one with what you are giving. Everything is one. How can you give anything away? Everything is one. How can you not give everything away? So maybe I'll stop there. And...